Welcome to the Open Doors Initiative podcast. My name is Jan McDonough. We work with companies, NGOs and government to create employability for marginalised groups. These include people with disabilities, migrants and disadvantaged youth, and you can visit us on opendoorsinitiative.ie. One area where we can support is with advice on change, loss and managing adversity. In this podcast, we are looking at the present situation's impact on your mental health. Dr. Patrick McKeown, founder of Aware and former clinical director of St. Patrick's Hospital, looks at some of these issues and offers some solutions and ideas. I started by asking him to explain how he saw the present situation from a mental health perspective.
Well, COVID-19 presents a big challenge to people, and it's a threat in terms of a person's livelihood, the risk of illness and even death. People are quite frightened, not just for themselves, but also for their families, and even more so for their families. And then it's so much more difficult then for people who have medical illnesses, mental health problems, people in direct provision centres, people in prison. But on the other hand, all of those people know what a daily life struggle is, and they're often extremely resourceful in terms of managing well with these crises. We're at this stage, as I see it, is that the nation is pulling together. We have a very clear message coming from professional advisors, the chief medical officer, the government, on what we need to do. And people are generally very cooperative and mindful of exactly what needs to be done. And in that way, the population are calmed by the message, they understand the threat, and we're getting the right information at the right time. Not too much all at once, but in a gentle way that we can get our heads around.
We next discussed how people respond to threats such as COVID-19.
Well, what tends to happen is that when we're threatened by something, we have a very effective mechanism for picking it up, because an event like COVID is just an event. But when humans look at it, they see, is it friendly or is it a foe? Is it welcome or unwelcome? And when threatened, the brain either goes into fight or flight. In a fight mode, people are up for it, rushing to the supermarkets, stocking up with stuff, being pushy, aggressive, demanding. And sometimes we forget that that's all fear-based. So in other words, our alarm system in the brain that detects and processes threat, it's very black and white. There's very few gradual ways of looking at it. It's either there or it's not there. And the second thing about threat then is that very often the rest of the brain doesn't get a look in when the emotional brain is frightened like that. So it can be hard for the emotional brain to take in facts. People who are in flight mode then are overly cautious, take excessive measures to prevent getting the virus, constantly cleaning and get into a more and more distressed state, and often then need mental help to get through their difficulties. So threat in that way has its uses, but on the other hand, it's a threat. And in those situations, people often can't see that, one, that it's not going to last forever, and secondly, often a threat has, in addition to the bad part, has a good part. It's a cloud with a silver lining. And we need to look for that silver lining. Yes, it can be very hard to see that silver lining when we're under threat, but it is there. We can even maybe just over the past week be aware of the sound of children playing and really enjoying themselves, or the birds singing and the trees reminding us that it is springtime. There will be big changes in society following this COVID-19 infection in terms of the appreciation of how much more technology can help us in life, how working from home is going to be more in demand and more popular, thus reducing long commutes and stress. You're going to see technology used much more for home education. You're going to see a whole raft of measures to develop early warning systems for future pandemics like this. So there is a silver lining, and we need to look at that. We need to look at the fact that nationally people have come together, everyone is pulling together, everyone is keen to help neighbours volunteer for within the clinical services and so forth.
He then expanded on what each of us can do personally to deal with the threat and our natural response to it.
Well, the main thing is to have ways of staying calm. We've got to heed the professional advice we're given of keeping a social distance, making sure that we don't expose others to the virus, following the hand hygiene recommendations and so forth. So we stick with the facts, because the facts are actually quite small in terms of what we've got to do. And we understand that. But what happens then is that all this terrified brain is running around the place and it needs to be calmed down. And the way to calm it down is to constantly remind yourself of the facts. Secondly, to make sure that the information you're getting is from trusted sources. So dealing or listening and watching the CMO's daily broadcast, listening to items on radio and TV from the national broadcasters and other prominent channels, and avoiding the deluge of information coming from elsewhere. So at a personal level, in terms of staying calm, the important things is that most people will have some way of calming themselves down usually. And it's important that they use that on a daily basis. So it may be things like going for a walk, getting exercise in some way. And now that many people are confined to their own homes, they can still exercise. They can still exercise in a room. If you walk around a room 50 times, you will find that it has a calming effect. And all of these things are a challenge, but on the other hand, they do work. Another one is using mindfulness. And mindfulness is something that a lot of people would be familiar with. But if they're not, now's a good time to try it. And it's a very simple process. It's very effective. And what it involves is simply listening, or to something as simple as listening to all of the sounds you hear around you, listening intently as if you're going to describe them at the end of the 10 to 30 minutes that you will sit and listen. What that does is it brings our brain into the present and away from our thoughts. Because when we focus on one of the senses, whether it's what we hear, what we see, what we taste, what we smell, or touch, our brain is then in the present. And when it's in the present, it means it's not in the future and it's not in the past. When we're anxious, we're in the future and we need to bring it back to the present. When we're regretful of things we've done or are blaming others for things, it means we're in the past. And again, to bring it back to the present, what we do is focus on one of the senses. So if somebody sits down for 15, 20 minutes and listens to all of the sounds, something as simple as that is extremely relaxing. Now, mindfulness is really just a beefed up process like that, where a person does it on a daily basis. And people can access information on mindfulness online. There are good demos on YouTube. And hopefully when this is all over, that people will look at attending a mindfulness program in their own locality. For other people, relaxation can be found from what's called deep muscle relaxation, from Tai Chi, from yoga, or from any creative pursuits, from anything as straightforward as knitting, right up to artistic painting. For other people, prayer is a way of feeling a sense of peace and having a sense of presence that they have learned to rely on and found comforting over the years. And again, often in times of threat, people can forget when they're in this threatened situation to go back to those patterns of behavior, which do support people a lot. The next thing I would emphasize is the need for people to have a good lifestyle, which is structured and preferably somewhat timetabled. What I mean by that is, to start with, going to bed at a fixed time, getting up at a fixed time, having meals at fixed time, because even that simple process maintains our biorhythms. And when our biorhythms are synchronized in that way, in other words, that we have fixtures in our daily activities, all of the body works together. If somebody, for example, is oversleeping, for example, just a simple thing of oversleeping by an hour or two, they will frequently wake feeling quite sluggish, maybe a headache, maybe not being able to concentrate. So in effect, they're almost having a jet lag phenomenon. So having steady biorhythms by having fixed bedtime, fixed wake time, fixed sleep times, or meal times, has a dramatically effective effect on helping people to maintain a steady lifestyle. So structuring things in terms of what you do at certain times of the day doesn't have to be all work or study, or it can be sitting down and listening to music or walking or exercise or painting the garden shed that has been left unpainted and you may not have noticed for years. But again, it's maintaining that structure. It means taking plenty of breaks during the day away from the timetable. So in a way, one needs to look at having that lifestyle as something that evolves around a process that's similar to going to work. It's a different type of work. It's not the same thing, but one needs to think about that. People need to be careful that they don't begin to rely more and more on alcohol, cigarettes, excessive caffeine intake, tea, other stimulants, overtaking chocolate, things like that. All of those things have an agitating effect on the brain, as too does, for example, excessive exercise, particularly if it's taken late in the evening. It can disrupt a person's sleep. So dealing with all of those things in moderation is important to maintain that synchronized system within the brain and the body and a relaxed lifestyle.
I asked Dr. McKeown to give some advice for those who must self-isolate and cocoon.
In terms of isolation, I think it's important that people not be afraid of it. Sometimes when people know they've got to isolate themselves, it's like looking down a tunnel. They get very frightened. Try not to look too far ahead. Just deal with each hour as it comes. Get through 1 hour, the next hour, and so forth, rather than getting into a distress about it. It's when one is in cocooning or in self-isolation that it's so important to have that structured timetable. You can add then to that structured timetable and build into it times for communicating with relatives, friends, through telephone, texting, WhatsApp, and so forth.
He then discussed how people with mental health difficulties might cope with the present situation and what specific challenges they might face.
People with mental health difficulties will find self-isolation in one way more of a threat. But many people, I find, who have been through significant mental health problems have often been isolated by their condition, and they're actually quite expert in that way at dealing with things. What's always surprised me over the years is how people who've had difficult circumstances, they're often much more resourceful than the average person in dealing with stress. Now, I know that's almost contradictory and people find it that hard to grasp. What people might find who have a tendency towards depression or mental health problems is that it's harder for them to maintain the daily structure. And they often have to focus much more on the very simple things like getting out of the bed in the morning. Because what happens if a person, when they wake and think about the day ahead, their thoughts about the day ahead may paralyze them and leave them in the bed. So what they've got to do is, as soon as they awaken, just put their foot on the floor. Not even think, just move. Because once they start moving, the brain starts moving. And once the brain is moving, it's less likely to sink into a despond of depression. So momentum is probably the most important thing for people with mental health difficulties, to try and maintain momentum. And the simple thing of foot on floor is the way to proceed. Second thing then is to focus on doing small things. And what I mean by small things, it might be picking up a bit of paper on the ground or washing your face. It doesn't have to be anything major, but it's to recognize, having done that, that you've achieved something. Because with each achievement, it helps the momentum and speeds up the momentum. Depression is essentially a slowing down of the whole mental function. And this momentum in the body gives momentum in the brain, which prevents and overcomes depression. When people have a history of mental health difficulties, particularly now during COVID-19, it's harder for them to keep in contact with their doctor or therapist. It's important that they endeavour to do so somewhat, particularly if they're in need, and to try and do this through email, texting, or FaceTime or Skype. Secondly, it's helpful that they find some way of logging how they've been, even writing a few words down each day of their progress, dealing with the main things, their sleep, their appetite, their concentration, their energy, and so forth. And there are different apps that they can access and that will help them log all that information. Because when the clinician has that information from them, it's very easy to get a better picture, not as good as it would be if the person was directly in a consultation with their doctor, but it does help. It's worthwhile for people who are depressed to make a special effort to keep in contact with those family members, friends, or people that they've met at support groups, because often other people who've been through depression are a great support to those who are in that self-isolating or cocooning situation. The important thing for people to also remember is that depression and self-isolation and all these things do come to an end. The important thing, again, is not to be looking too far ahead, to focus on the immediate hour. If the hour is too long, just getting through the next minute, the next 5 minutes, the next 10 minutes, and so forth. And then to realise, having done that, what the person has achieved that day.
Dr. McKeown concluded with some good advice about maintaining trust and optimism for the future.
In this time of crisis and at a national and personal level, is to focus on the message we're getting from the Chief Medical Officer and the scientists and clinicians who are involved in guiding the nation. We've got to trust them and trust the people that we elect. At a personal level, what each person can do is follow that advice and feel that they're part of the team. Society is coming together to overcome this, and yes, it will be overcome.
We are supporting this with other podcasts and a toolkit of practical information and links to help with new working patterns and other change. These will be available on our website, opendoorsinitiative.ie. If you wish to submit a comment or question, please send it to info@opendoorsinitiative.ie. Thank you.